Welcome to Gen Z Hoops, the Gen Z basketball, coaching, and sports business show.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Gen Z Hoops podcast. Today, I'm joined by assistant coach of the Long Island Nets with expertise in player development, Coach LD Williams. Coach Williams, how are you doing today, sir?
Doing great. How about yourself, man?
I'm good. Just finished like a long day of classes and had early morning pickup and lift this morning, but we're pushing through.
No, I don't envy the beginning of that day at all. Class and all that stuff. So far behind me, so I don't envy that.
I totally agree. Well, I like to start off our little discussion here. Can you talk a little bit about your connection to the game of basketball?
Oh, man. I think I tell people a lot of time I was born with like a basketball in my like heart or something. Like I've always been drawn to it. Some of my earliest childhood memories are watching like basketball games with my dad in the living room. So for as long as I can remember, basketball has been like a huge like influence on like who I've been from the beginning. And then as I grew to like understand more and more about the game and my game grew in itself, it's been a pretty cool partnership for since forever, honestly.
Well, that's amazing. Well, you grew up in North Carolina. Do you ever think like, I know you said like you grew up with a basketball kind of in your heart, but like, do you ever think you were kind of geared towards the game with having like institutions like UNC and Duke kind of in your backyard?
I mean, I literally had Wake Forest in mind, so 100%. You know, we refer to ourselves as the Hoop State.
Yep.
And we guard that and put it up against anybody that has any reservations to that decree. I grew up with a lot of hoopers that, lucky for me, I got to play with. Growing up, I got to play against a lot of really good dudes that went on to play at a high level in college. And most of the guys that I grew up with went on to play at the very least overseas for a couple of years. So, yeah, man, like growing up in North Carolina definitely does build on that whole basketball as a religion. Like that's where all that is birthed for me as well, for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. I actually went down to North Carolina a couple of years ago for like the showcase called like Elite 40 by like Stellar Hoops. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Yeah, I was like the only guy from New York out there, and it was just like a bunch of guys from North Carolina. I think it was in Concord, North Carolina. That's where it was.
Right outside of Charlotte.
All the like, if I'm being honest, those are like some of like the best runs I've ever played in. It was like. Kind of like street ball in a way. Like it wasn't like, yeah, there were refs and all that stuff, but it was like, hold your own, go get a bucket, like those types of runs. So I can definitely agree with you that you guys will hold it to your standard of being the Hoop State.
Yeah, man, that's just what it is. Like, and the crazy thing about that is when we were growing up, we only played against the dudes from different parts of the state in AAU. So it wasn't like we saw each other all year long. It was like we played against the dudes in our area. And then in AAU, we were on teams that may have crossed over with some of those other areas. But for the most part, it was like the Triad area and then like Charlotte area, Raleigh, and Durham, like all those different spaces had their like group of teams that they played against for the majority of the time. And then it wasn't until the summertime that we actually got to like compete against the teams from Charlotte or compete against the teams from Raleigh and Durham. And like, it's just funny how the dynamic is. Like, I think in other cities, like New York, we both live in New York now, like all the boroughs, those dudes have been competing against each other since they were kids, like in all types of tournaments and leagues and all that stuff. Like, you would see those dudes all the time. We only got to see, like, I only saw Ish in the summer. Like, I only saw, who were the guys from like Durham? Like those, I saw those dudes in the summer. It wasn't like we saw each other in our school leagues and then played in the summer. So it was like those dudes might have gotten better that whole year. And then in the summertime, like, damn, like He's cold. I gotta work on my stuff. Like, and then you see each other in the summertime. So it was dope to me. Like, that was cool.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, I played AAU with the Riverside Hawks when I was in high school, and we're so used to like that city competition up there in like Harlem, so like and like the Bronx around there. So we play like a lot of
Yeah.
Gauchos, like PSA, all those teams. But then like now there's like tournaments. I don't know if you're familiar with the Collision tournament. Like
No.
there's this tournament, the Collision, out in Long Island, or like it was held at Island Garden actually, where it's like you get guys from the city coming down, you get guys from Long Island, all those elite teams coming down, and then it's like
Wow.
kind of like the city against like Long Island in a way. So like we see like all a bunch of talent like from all around New York just going at it all weekend. So
That's
like
awesome.
yeah, I always like got really like hyped up for that tournament, if I'm being honest with you, because like those guys like that, I really didn't see guys like that because I actually didn't go to school in New York. I went to prep school in Connecticut, but like you're always hyped up to play like different like areas of New
Yeah,
York competition at the end of the day.
100%, always.
So, back to your career. So, you attended Forbush High School. Can you talk a little bit about your time at Forbush?
Yeah, man, middle of nowhere, North Carolina. But with a group of about, I would say, me and the my like best friend growing up, one of my best friends growing up, Rhett Bonner. We were probably the most serious just about basketball. And our coach, Marty Sewell, was like really serious about basketball. Like, he took everything from all those camps and clinics and seminars and stuff that he would go to, that like Roy Williams and Coach K or whoever he was going, like, he really tried to apply those things because he thought we took the game serious enough. But then, like, the dudes that played with us, like, took basketball enough serious with us because they knew how serious it was for us, and they were good athletes, so it worked out well. My second year, my first year, we were pretty bad just because we were young and we didn't have enough talent. But my second year, we all developed a little bit, and that was fun. We lost in the state semifinals to the team who won the state championship. Short-lived. I only did 2 years there before I went to Mount Vernon. But yeah, no, it was pivotal in, like, the early stages of my growth and development, kind of, learning the game. My coach, he taught us the game at a high level, so that transitioned well for me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I actually attended like a pretty small school too in New York. It's called Kew Forest. Like whenever people like ask me where I went to school before prep, I tell them that school and they're like, "Where's that?" But yeah, like our coach over there, Coach Jeff, Jeffrey St. Simon, he actually like took basketball really seriously as soon as he came in. And looking back on it, me and like three of my other friends, like one plays at Brown now, one plays at Binghamton, the other plays at Hunter in the city, and I'm here at Hobart. We had like four college basketball players, but we were all like really young. We were like freshmen at the time. So like
Right.
he kind of like helped us gear us, like kind of helped us mature a little bit. And then we all ended up going to prep schools like the next year. But
Oh.
I kind of resonate with your story. So as you said, you were only at Forbush High School for 2 years, but before attending one of the most prolific high schools known for their basketball and Montford Academy. Can you talk a little bit about your decision to transfer to Montford Academy and what it was like to adapt to like the training regimen and the level of competition?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to go at first, to be honest. Just the idea of leaving home. I was kind of sheltered. My group of people were my group of people, and I was comfortable in that space, and it was working for us. And I started getting some attention already, so I was like not really excited about going to Montverde at first. But then I kind of, after going to visit the campus and seeing exactly what they were doing, stuff that I talked about wanting to do, and like actually getting to do it, like, it kind of just aligned with what was happening at Mount Vernon. So yeah, I just one night after a workout with my dad and my guy Romy, who I used to work out with in high school, I just told him I was going to Mount Vernon. That was pretty much it once I decided that I wanted to go was just about telling my friends, which, at the time seemed like one of the most difficult things to do, but
Yeah.
really wasn't that tough. I was just excited about the new opportunity. I knew that it was kind of new for everybody. That was the second year that the coach that I played for, Kevin Sutton, had started the program. The first group of seniors, or the first senior, Edon Ebock, went to Michigan State. And the group of seniors that was before me were really awesome, and they were a collective of like the United Nations, just because they were from everywhere in Europe and Africa. It was dope, and like there was just no egos, and everybody was good, and our coach was really tough on us. Like I just knew that it was going to transition well. It was better for me to go there and have that experience if I wanted to go to college than it was to stay where I was at and just,
Yep.
be around those people. So, I just made a big boy decision, and I saw a little bit forward, so to speak, and Montverde was the great space that it was even back then.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, it clearly worked out in your favor when you decided to commit to Wake Forest, but before we get into that, can you talk a little bit about your experience with the recruiting process? Like, I remember I listened in on John Wall's podcast, and like he's also from North Carolina as well, and he was saying like how he was going on all these other visits even though he didn't know he wanted to go, even though he said like, no, I'm gonna go to Kentucky in my mind already, because like he never like really like ventured out of North Carolina. Did you ever have like a experience sort of kind of like that?
No, so I actually took no visits. So I don't have the recruiting stories that everybody else has. Like everybody, like all the coaches that recruited us, they all came to Montverde to watch us work out. So like it was like a pseudo home visit. Like I would meet with coaches in Coach Sutton's office after practice. But it was kind of like an unknown that I was going to Wake Forest. Like it was the math too easily. My relationship with the coaching staff, even like as I was going to Montverde, so even before I it, like a year and a half before I committed, like the relationship was there. CP and I were really close, so he had went there, and he was transitioning out, and couple of my boys, Ishmael Smith, Jamie Skeen, had committed. So it made too much sense for me not to go to Wake Forest, come back home, and experience that college experience with the people closest to me.
Yeah, totally agree. So, what was your experience like going into your freshman year? Like, what kind of mindset did you have going into your freshman year at Wake Forest?
Probably some irrational confidence. You're coming from high school where, you're nationally recognized as a team. Your recruiting class is top 10 in the country. Like you think you're gonna come in and it's gonna be a transition, but you don't think it's not much. But it was big, man. I was blessed enough to have some upperclassmen that competed at a high level, but never took it personal
Yeah.
if I did better than them in something. Like not, or they took it personal, but never made it like awkward.
Yeah.
Or, they just were like, dang, like, it was just a mutual respect. Like, bro, I gave it my all, you gave it your all. Like, shit, you was better. Like it was. And then like that turned into like a mentorship. And then, my best friend on the team, Cameron Stanley, was the guy I was fighting with minutes for. So, and he never like hated. And that was cool. So I never really, like on the days when I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do, he was the first one to check me. Like it never really got to the coaching staff. So like having dudes like that in your corner, like the transition is much easier. So you can compete in the same space, and it's going to be just that, and you can be as ruthless and as as you want to be within that ring. But as soon as we walk off the court, like, it's all love and I understand because we want to play.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it made the transition easy. And then by my time in Montverde too, like, Coach Kevin Sutton ran college style practices. So when I got there, it felt like I was at Montverde still in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I can testify to that as well. I do feel like especially here, like we have our fair share of like heated moments and pickup. Like, shoot, there were like a lot of them this morning, over at pickup.
Yeah.
But like the older guys really never like make it easy on us young guys. Like, and I really like that. Like, they go at us every single play because like sometimes like they're stronger than us, more mature than us, but they keep going at us 24/7. Like, actually, there's like this happened the other day. One of my teammates, like Gabe, one of my teammates, Gabe, he's actually like 6'8". He's like has a nice handle, can like shoot the ball really well. So it's like really hard to like contest his shot. So like he was hitting like all these fadeaways over me and stuff like that. Then our starting point guard Aiden's like, man, he's like your kryptonite. He's like, we should like switch the matchup. So I kind of tricked me a little bit. So I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna guard this guy. Like, I like kind of like tricked me to like step up my game. And then we ended up going down and like winning that game of pickup. So I can totally agree. Like, the older guys really do a good job of like mentoring us young guys at the end of the day.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's everybody's better when everybody's better.
Yep, totally agree. So heading into your sophomore year, you became a team captain. During this time, how did it feel to be entrusted with this responsibility? And what would you say the biggest challenges were for you with this responsibility?
Man, honestly, I probably didn't think it was that big of a deal to, like, when you're in the moment like that, I don't like it was cool. I can honestly say it is cool that, as a sophomore, being that young, like those dudes, maybe they didn't care enough to vote for themselves. Maybe they didn't want the responsibility that comes with being a captain. Like, I don't know. But for me, I just wanted to, play and do certain things a certain way that it was, upstanding of, what I thought a Wake Forest athlete should represent. So, like, for me, it was just doing what I thought was right most of the time and playing my ass off whenever I got an opportunity to play, and understanding that it was bigger than me. I think a lot of my other teammates probably thought the same things, but they just wanted to hoop, and I was cool with that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, from I've seen like our team captains this year, like they weren't like the most vocal guys in the locker room, but like they led by example. I mean, they were vocal, don't get me wrong, but like they weren't like do this, do that kind of vocal guys. You know what I mean? They were like when they went hard, like it pushed us and motivated us to go hard at the same
100%.
time.
100%.
So yeah, I can totally agree in that sense. So junior year was a big jump for you, being named to the All ACC defensive team, becoming the first Deacon since Josh Howard in the 2002-03 season to be named to the first team. So reflecting on this honor, what comes to mind?
Just playing my role, honestly. We had some really good offensively gifted dudes: Jeff Teague, James Johnson, Alfred Kaminu, Ishmael Smith. Like, all those dudes could assume the role of scoring however many points we needed to score that day. But like, somebody had to guard the other team's best player. Like, somebody had to do it. I was athletic, I was strong, so I could guard multiple positions. It just was, I had a knack for playing defense, and I didn't care if somebody scored, like if it was tough, like whatever. I didn't care.
Next play mentality.
yeah, so I liked it. Honestly, I liked playing defense. It just made sense. Like, I knew no matter what, like, I was gonna have to play because somebody on the other team could score. So I knew I was gonna be able to at least be out there to guard them, and whatever I did on offense was gravy, to be honest. But yeah, no, just man, it was cool to be recognized because I didn't have a lot of godly defensive statistical numbers. Like I never really got a lot of steals. You know, I never got a lot of blocks. Like, so the numbers really weren't there for me to say that, you know, I was one of the best defenders. So like you really had to watch the game and understand how I really affected the game on that end of the floor. So just to have, you know, people understand and kind of see that, you know, I was really disruptive. And that was cool. But honestly, the coolest thing was that I was able to contribute to something that was really special at Wake Forest that has yet to be done since we've done it, was win 16 straight games. You know, we were number one in the country, which has only happened one other time in school history. And like I played with some of the best players, and like that to me, like obviously going to a Final Four, I don't know what that feels like, but to say that I had played with all of those dudes and we did some cool stuff when I was there, for me, that's enough.
Yeah, most definitely. So you mentioned Jeff Teague. Jeff Teague's actually one of my favorite players, I can't even lie. What was it like to like play with him and have him as your point guard in college?
I mean, the stuff that you guys probably respected the most out of his game, like I got to see that shit firsthand from the first day he stepped on campus. Like it was really cool to see the progression, really, because when he first got there, I don't think everybody kind of believed in his game the way that he believed in his game. I don't even think we did, mainly because we didn't know, but a lot of reason, like we had Ish as well. Like,
Yeah.
so it's been coming off of a great freshman year. So it was kind of like insurance, so to speak, not like to demean or anything, but like it was kind of like we had somebody was leaving and Jeff was really good. So we needed to like have somebody to run our second unit. When he got there, he had eyes for the prize, man. So very quickly, we realized that this dude was not was here to play, was here to hoop, and it was dope. It was dope, man. Those battles that, you know, they had those early year, that early in his freshman year, and then him working his way up to being a starter very early into the season, really dope. And after that, when they put him in the starting lineup, it was over. Like, it
Yeah.
was over. But yeah, it was right before conference started. It was over. He took off. And then the second year, he went home and he knew he was good and could get better. And he came back and was like, all right, y'all been talking about everybody but me.
Are you a fan of the Club 520 podcast?
Oh, of course. Of course. I think it's a side that of Jeff that only his teammates probably got to see of him. Like the
Yeah.
media didn't really have that side of him. He just wasn't one to like, you know, be in front of the camera. But I think him being up there with his boys, like the world is getting to see what all of his teammates got to see from him this whole time as a hooper.
Yeah, I totally agree. Every time he posts a new video or like one of those reels, I'm always like waiting and watching it. Like it could be like right out of class at lunch. I'm always like tuned in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Hilarious
That's dope.
stories. They're
That's dope. That's
actually not even just funny, like they actually like kind of like help you with like a little bit of guidance as well. If you like, he drops some gems if you like pick out the bits
Oh
and pieces. He actually
yeah,
does
no,
drop some gems. I could totally agree to that.
that's hilarious, man.
So, as a senior, you closed out your college career in grand fashion. In your final collegiate game against Kentucky, which was the 09-010 Kentucky team with John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Eric Bledsoe, DeAndre Liggins, you
Yep.
passed the 1,000-point milestone and finished your career with 1,005 points. Can you talk a little bit about the emotions when you passed the 1,000-point mark in that game? And heading into this game, what was your mindset?
I mean, it was cool to say I scored 1,000, but we lost by like 25.
It's hard.
So the emotion was like extreme sadness because that was my last college game. But hell, like going into that game, we were really confident. You know, we had just beat a really good Texas team. And so you start to grow a little momentum. So we were pretty confident. We knew that they were really talented, but we knew we had a good group too. At one point in the season, we were ranked in the top 25. We had been battle tested in the ACC, so we were comfortable with who we were. But I mean, those dudes were good. It was a good group there.
I actually like heard John Wall again in this podcast. I know I'm a huge John Wall fan as well. Like he was talking a little bit about like how they were like such like a downhill oriented team. Like they weren't really like a jump shooting team. Was that like was the game plan going to the game like stop them from going in transition and make them play in the half court more, if you
Nah,
recall?
because that's how we played too. I mean, Ishmael Smith was our point guard, so bro, we're all right. We fast too. We didn't. We knew that we couldn't. We had to play our game. Like we knew that. We knew we had to play our style. But Farouk got a little bit of early foul trouble in the first half, and then that they were able to exploit that mismatch a little bit, and then it was over before. It was over before halftime.
That happens. Don't worry. Well, going on to your professional career, when did you know that you wanted to play professional basketball?
I mean, when I got to college, I always, you're always looking at the level above you, trying to assess and see how what that looks like for you. So I knew I wanted to play at the next level all 4 years. And then it just became more realistic after my senior year. I didn't think like I was mature enough to go the overseas route right away. So I had a tough conversation with my agent and I ended up staying in the G League and ended up being a great experience my rookie year. But I what did I do? Oh, after the showcase in the G League, I ended up finishing the season in the Philippines. So that kind of started my professional career, and I got to taste both the G League and all of that stuff in one. So, yeah, no, for as long as I can remember, like playing at the next level was always the goal.
Did you ever, what were the crowds like over in when you played overseas basketball? Because I've actually played in Greece with this Greek organization called Super League Athletic Academy, and
Okay.
we play like all like the U19, U18, like national teams over there. But then he actually took us to like the pro game, and that arena
That's
was
nuts.
crazy. They were like throwing smoke bombs in the
Yeah,
air, burning flags.
it's like college atmosphere with less rules. So
It's
like, yeah,
insane.
it's like those type of atmospheres with a little bit less rules and a little bit more alcohol.
And then they last year when I went, because that was my last year like going to play over there, they actually like the crazy fans, they like kind of like, I don't want to say trap, but like I actually no, let me say trap. They kind of like trap them in a cage kind of. It's like no one can get in or out besides like that one little section in the back, and there's like a guard there because no one wants to go in there. Smoke
My,
bombs.
yeah, sure, it's crazy. Yeah, man. More alcohol, less rules.
Yeah, man. It was insane. So
Yeah, it's
did
like
you ever...
college passion. That's like you get the passion of like the fan and the city and all that stuff. That's why you get those crazy fans like that.
Actually, before when we he our the director of the organization actually took us to watch like an Olympiakos game. It was like one of the pro teams in Greece. And then like I actually met like one of like because the visiting team was staying in the ho same hotel as us, so like it was actually Rodion Skuritz's brother who I met, and he gave
Oh
me like
yeah.
a yeah he gave me like a t-shirt of like their team, and we were supposed to be like wearing like jerseys of Olympiakos. I'm like, I'm not wearing that. I like threw it back at our director, and I
That's
was like, I'm
hilarious.
wearing this. They were like hassling me to go like take that t-shirt off because they said like you get like hassled or like jumped or something because like these people don't play around. It's not like wearing like a Miami Heat jersey to the Garden or something like that. It's like hardcore stuff.
It's like real passion. It's funny, man. Not funny to like disrespectful, but it's like really, it's like a thing. It's a thing.
Yeah, I didn't know that. But then like you get there and then you see them burning the flag and all. I'm like, I was like,
Yeah,
yeah, you
real.
saved my life there. I was like, you guys
It's
saved
real.
me. So you began playing your professional career for the Springfield Armor. What was your experience like playing for this team, and what did you learn that helped you with the rest of your career?
Oh man, we stunk. That's what I remember the most. We were so bad. I think playing at Springfield, I just learned to like put my head down and work. Like what we practiced was a dump. Springfield was like up and coming then, so it was like on the upwards. It wasn't the greatest city at the time. But man, like we just worked every day. Like I just felt every day D pushed us to be better. D Brown was our coach. And I was with a group of dudes that just loved basketball. James on Curry, prolific scorer, but he just loved basketball and he kind of could teach the game a little bit to help these young rookies that had never experienced the NBA or anything like it understand what was going on. My boy Jerry Smith was huge because he was like super competitive. So it was never boring in practice. So we were able to get something out of it every day. And then like just the everyday grind of it all. Like you just want to get better and you feel yourself getting better. So you just continue to work and chip away at it. And I think that's the day. My rookie year was just about grinding. I saw some dividends pay off. Like I said, I got a contract to go play in the Philippines after the showcase. So like I just saw some of the work that I was putting in like show off. So that's where I just got to like the grind it out and just make your way. Don't wait for somebody to pave it for you.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, aside from playing for the Springfield Armor, you also had the opportunity to play for the San Antonio Spurs Summer League team back in 2012. What was your experience like being a part of Spurs culture for the Summer League?
Oh man, it was crazy, man. It was fun though. Ironically enough, Jacques Vaughn was our head coach
Oh, wow.
for that summer league experience. Will Hardy was an assistant. Taylor Jenkins was an assistant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Missing one more. He's also a head coach. But yeah, like that was the summer league staff there. Corey Joseph was coming off his rookie year. It was fun, man. It was fun. Like being on the other side of the summer league experience and understanding how special it is for like the selection and playing for each team and how you want them to represent the organization. It's really cool, man. So just to say I've been a part of that experience and then to say you've been in the sports like in the Spurs organization for a little bit of time, it was really cool.
That was like
You know,
in the midst of their like dynasty right there, like
yeah,
2 years before they won that fifth championship,
the
I believe.
14th,
Yep.
the 14 year. Yeah, man, it was just a really, really cool experience that I'm glad that I was able to go through. Got to start a game, played a game with Kawhi Leonard.
Wow.
Yeah, did some cool stuff.
Did you ever connect with fellow Wake Forest alum Tim Duncan?
Not there, but we obviously just because of the connection and there's even a deeper connection there. My high school coach also coached Randolph Childress, who played with Timmy in college at Wake Forest.
Wow. Okay.
So then there's the deeper connection there. So never not when I was in summer league, but oh, so many other times outside of that for sure.
Wow, that's amazing. So aside from playing with the Spurs at Summer League, I heard that you were the D League slam dunk champion. Can you
Huh,
talk a little bit about that experience?
yeah, man. I was invited to the dunk contest. My rookie year was we did it in South Padre Island at the showcase, and then obviously they had another one at the All-Star weekend. I was gone for that one though. And then my sophomore year, yeah, my second year in the G, All-Star weekend in Orlando, and I had no idea what I wanted to do. Like it's like 30 minutes before the dunk contest. I'm like, bro, I don't know I have no plan. My boy Jerry was like, bro, you should just do all windmills. Like when you jump as high as you can, do windmills, always clean. So I was like, all right. Like, how many different ways can I do a windmill? So the first one, I just threw it up, caught it as high as I could, and just threw it in. And like, it was like a loud silence. Like everybody was like, oh, and then like you just see people trying to figure out, like, yo, that was crazy, like how high he was. So then when I knew I had that like behind me, I knew I was gonna be able to like just wow him with just the dunks. I didn't have to bring out any extra,
Like a mascot or something, you didn't have to do
yeah, like
all
I didn't have to
that.
jump over anything. Like then I knew I was like, then it just felt like layup lines after that, honestly.
Did you ever get like nervous, like having all like those eyes on you? Like I know like on
Yeah.
Club 520, Jeff Teague actually like talked about like in the skills challenge how he was just like him out there and he ended up like going to miss a layup and stuff like that, and he was
Yeah.
like so embarrassed.
It's just it's worse with like my experience is worse in warm-ups. Cause like you're out there with everybody, but like everybody's still trying to see and gauge, like, do you have balance? Like, what are you doing? So like you may just be fooling around trying to like get the kinks out of some dunks, but like after I put the first one down, it was just about just doing the dunks. But it is tough. Like you're used to going out there and it's the refs and it's, you know, nine other players and maybe coaches on the sideline. But no, like competitions like that, it's just you and the ball and the rim. And you better do something crazy so these people will clap because you'll feel sick if they start booing or something.
Yeah, they're on the Knicks, like Jericho Sims a couple of years, I think it was like
Yeah.
last, yeah, he tried to
Last
like
year, or
bring like
not
the
last
fifth,
year, but
yeah, the year
two
before,
podcasts. Yeah, yeah,
he tried to
yeah.
bring like the 50 out and it like ripped and everyone started like
Yeah,
giving it to
man.
him
Like
for
that stuff,
that.
all that stuff got to come together. That's why I was hyped. If it was just the dunks, then I was good. Like I could just get people with the dunks. Like, great. Awesome.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, right, when did you know that you wanted to get into coaching?
Probably my later years, I would say. I had really good coaches, and then in college, I had a good relationship with a couple of our coaches, and you know, they would always like put the bug in my ear, like you should be a coach, or you know, whenever you got to coach somebody like you'll understand. So it was either one of those two. But I always took a liking to like the strategic part of basketball. It was always something that I was intrigued by. So, you know, spend a little bit of extra time asking questions to my coaches after practice, watching more film. I always, you know, was a guy that liked to watch film. So yeah, man, like I think it's always been in me to be a coach, but I just didn't know what level I wanted to try to scratch that itch on. You know, I was able to coach at the grassroots level. I loved it. I coached girls. It was awesome. But then I started working with pros, and it just unlocked this another level of just wanting to learn more about that. And you know, that was whenever I knew I wanted to work in the NBA.
Wow, that's amazing. I can actually like relate to you. I kind of am like a basketball geek in a way as well. Like my first year in college, I actually didn't play. I like redshirted my first year, so I like talked to coach and like I took on the role of like a player development manager here. So like I got to see the game from like a whole different perspective, like kind of like a coach's perspective. So I'd be like sit on the bench during games. I wouldn't suit up. I would like keep track of like different actions that we run or like how we attack the defense, how many times like we stop like different cuts or different actions on their part. And then even in practice as well, like you see like how different ways like the play can be broken down. Like
Yeah.
if we want to use this screen, you can go off left, you can go off right, you can like slip it towards the middle. So
Yeah.
I really was like fascinated by that. Yeah, and like people make fun of me all the time here because I'm always like watching some sort of film in like the dining hall here, but like, I don't know. You can't stay away from the game, I guess.
No, for sure. Keep that itch. I love that.
Yeah, man. I'm trying, man. I'm trying. So, as I've stated before, You're currently the assistant coach for the Long Island Nets. How did this position present itself, and what is your experience like being a part of the Nets organization?
Man, it's been awesome, just to be a part of a first class organization like Brooklyn. Like, can't really trade the experience for anything. I worked in the video room for 2 years, and there was just a time for growth, and the opportunity was there for me to kind of grow into a coach. And it was kind of presented to me, and I was just ready for whatever the next step was. So for me, it was the role that I'm in now, and it was a transition. It's different than what I was doing, because now all the ideas and stuff that you have and you're thinking about when you're working in the video room and you're cutting up all that stuff, now you get to put it in practice and play. And you're starting to find your coach's voice and to translate and all that stuff. So it's a really good, I would say, month or 2 month transition into all of that to try to figure that. But then you settle into it, just like anything else. It becomes a routine. And yeah, man, the experience,
I mean from like my experience with like going to like all these camps and showcases and even like taking on this podcast, like over the years, like you're never really going to be like 100% comfortable, I feel like, in a certain role. Like you always have to be like, I don't want to, like, I don't know if this makes sense, but like comfortable with being uncomfortable, I always think.
There's some truth in that. I have mixed feelings about like that whole ideal, but you do need some of that, because especially in basketball, just in terms of like the travel, like you're always going to be uncomfortable. You're on a flight, you're in a hotel, like you're never in your own, the comfort of your own home. But like creating those comfortable pockets, I think that's where you can just thrive. Get your, like, I have a routine on the road, and it's comfortable for me, even though like it's a different space, a different place. Like, I'm able to tap into like a routine and a similarity, so that I am a little bit less anxious about what's going on.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, the Nets recently selected Jalen Wilson in this past draft. I actually like had the pleasure of meeting Jalen at Summer League this past summer and like interviewing him for like a couple minutes. Could you talk a little bit about his development this past year?
Oh, it's been great, man. J. Will is awesome. He is like rugged old school, because he spent so many years in school, so he kind of understands the aspect of like the work and what goes into the day-to-day. So that part of it is, for a lot of young guys, it's tough, but he grasped that early. And then, yeah, like just adjusting from the college style to the NBA game, I think that was just a huge gap, even for a guy that dominated the Big 12 the way that he did. So yeah, he just needed those reps to like rep out the daily, how to play in different coverages, how to rotate in the NBA, and figure out what works for him on offense and what doesn't, and how he can be effective in his role. So like, yeah, he just needed those type reps. He was obviously physically gifted. He understands like the mental approach that it takes to like day to day to day to day progression period. He just needed the NBA reps, and now he's getting a little bit of minutes in the NBA, so he's filling that out even more and more. So it's really cool, man. That's what the G League is about.
So from my interview with Jalen over the summer, like I talked to him a little bit about kind of like him taking on like more leadership in his last year at Kansas, because like coming off that 2022 national championship, and like he said like what he told me he was like that he's like ready for the role, that like he's been in the program so many years, he like knew like what was expected and like held those guys to the same standard. So it's great to see that he's like taking that to the NBA now.
I mean, that's what it's about. Like, you hope that you get, some sort of structure from your college coach. Like, that's Why I think I was able to kind of seamlessly transition into every level is because the coaches that I played for gave me a baseline, and I was able to build on that baseline. And like Jalen has a great baseline, so his transition to college was literally, I mean, to the pros was just about basketball. And
Right.
that's what comes with being in a program for so long. Like he said, he had been in Kansas's program for years, so him stepping into a leadership role is just him being more vocal about what he does on a day-to-day instead of, just doing it. Now you're just vocal and you're bringing people along with you on your day-to-day. So he's J. Will has been awesome. He's going to be a great pro just because his eagerness to want to get better and learn, his understanding this with the process is he's got a long, bright future.
Yeah, most definitely. So, as I stated before, you're the assistant coach of the Long Island Nets, but you also have expertise in player development. What is your training philosophy on working with these NBA players?
I want to stay creative within structure. I don't know if I have a philosophy, so to speak. Mainly because I just don't take myself that serious. But yeah, no, I mean, I want the game to continue to be fun. I don't like to restrict players to be within a box, but there's some things that that's too high level for even pros at some capacities. So you want to continue to build on those weaknesses or non-strengths. The player has to have some sort of say in their development because it's their game. Like we're just helping them along with their game.
Right.
So yeah, man, I just hope that I'm being a vessel of positivity. That's what I want to bring to it. Like we as trainers and coaches or whatnot, like I want it to be a positive experience. I don't want to break down people's games, build them up. Like I think that's what my coaches did for me. Like if that's the philosophy, like that's what it is. We're building up games. We're not breaking down film. We want to make players better and enjoy the process of it.
Yeah, most definitely. With a lot of my trainers and like other like player development guys who work in the NBA and overseas that I've just talked to, they always like talked about like this sort of like you got to build trust with the player. Like, would you say
Yeah,
that's true for yourself as well?
100%. Like real personal trust. Like I try not to talk to a lot of the guys that I work with about basketball outside of basketball, like outside of like a game, but like not like, yo, whenever you're here, you gotta do this. And like, nah, we could be talking about sports or whatever, but like we talk about like real life, like out off the court. Like we're not on the court, like what we should be talking about something up, like not on the court. So to be able to build that type of trust for sure, because if you could talk about life, you could talk about basketball easy. Like that stuff is, I don't have an agenda there. Like I'm just trying to help you get better. So yeah, that the trust factor is probably the biggest piece in all of it. Like to trust somebody with your game, like for the players that we work with, that's their money maker. That's all they have is their game. So if I'm not trying to enhance that, I'm not living up to my end of the bargain.
Yep, totally agree. So I had to ask you this question, had to throw it in there. What is it like working with a great basketball mind and Andrew Cobian, Coach Andrew Cobian?
AC, that's one of my best friends, man. Like that dude is energetic. That's what he brings to the game. He brings energy. He brings effort. He brings heart, grit. Like that dude is awesome. Like every day that I got to work beside that dude, I was lucky and blessed, man.
I actually met him when I was like really, really young, when I was in like 6th or 7th grade. He used to coach at Hofstra back in the day,
Yeah,
and I
yep.
used to go to their summer camp. It was Joe Mihalik's basketball camp, and like
Yep.
he was the most competitive guy ever. Like I he never drafted me on his team, but like because I would get like picked up by like all these other coaches. We'd always meet him in the finals. I never beat that guy's team in the finals. He'd have
That's
guys like two guys. I remember like my last year at the camp, like picking me up full. I'm like, come on, man. It's a camp game. He's like, I'm not letting you get anything easy, Ash. I'm not letting you get anything easy. But
fine.
yeah, I've like really admired his work ethic and his competitiveness. Like from then on, it kind of like he kind of like dropped those gems on me at a young age, and it kind of like helped me propel myself to like where I am now. So, and I'm
Yeah,
trying to
it's
get him on
good.
this show. I'm trying to get him on the show. Shout out Andrew. Shout out Coach
Yeah,
Andrew, man.
I'll tell him I did the interview.
Coaches
I'm
and
looking
Coffee
forward.
too. He had that nice little podcast going on. I
Yeah,
remember.
yeah, yeah.
I used to listen to that thing all the time when I was at school.
That's
Yeah, I'm a
funny.
big fan of his. So back to your
That's
career. What are your future aspirations for your career going forward?
man, I want to be a head coach. That's the end goal. I'm kind of in the thick of it now, so I want to see it through. I'm learning. I've been around some really, really, really awesome coaches, man. So it'd be cool to like tap into those this summer and kind of just figure out how to continue to grow and develop. So yeah, man, that's long term. Definitely want to be sitting at the head of it all.
Right, most definitely. Well, I wish you the best of luck in that in going forward, and of course the off season and working out with all these NBA players. Thank you again for coming on the show today, Coach Williams.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, bro.
Thanks for listening to Gen Z Hoops. Make sure to follow, like, and subscribe on Instagram, LinkedIn, and all major social media platforms at Gen Z Hoops. You can tune in and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and every other podcast platform on the planet. Get ready for the next episode.